Can just remind you, our fill-ins are on the back of our sermon notes. A baby is born to a young couple, and there's great celebration, but there's also great fear, because this baby has been born at a time of darkness in the history of his people, a time of brutality, a time of slavery. Remember, Now, a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. That's the start of this new baby. And our first fill-in this morning is Moses was a great man of faith because his parents were people of faith. We can sort of miss this in the story of Moses, but his parents, young though they probably were Levites, it said. They followed the traditions of their forefathers. They were worshipping God in a foreign country, which couldn't have been easy. A country filled with foreign gods. Now, Moses wasn't their first child. Moses had an older sister, Miriam, and he's got a brother who's 3 years older, Aaron. Now, I got thinking, we're not told why Aaron wasn't killed in the persecution. Maybe it was because they hadn't started it by the time he was born. But we've got Moses, and he's got an older sister and an older brother. Because remember the order we got from last week. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: every Hebrew boy that is born, he must throw into the Nile, but you can let every girl live. You've got to see the picture here, because this young couple decided, we are not going to comply. Whatever happens, we are going to hide this baby. And that's a courageous step they took. Because I got thinking, how do you keep a baby quiet? I don't know, did they pretend it was a girl? That's what I thought. Dress it up as a girl, you'll get a couple of more months. We're not told. But they were determined that this baby boy would not be killed. And they were taking a huge risk. And this morning I want to ask you, how much are you willing to risk so that your children or your grandchildren will have a church where they can find God? As I've been saying, and as I started a couple of weeks ago, I'll be using the Exodus story to sketch out some of the things that I've been learning and some of the things I want to put to you on the Path of Renewal teaching that I'm getting. We looked last week at the idea of change. Remember, we talked about two types of change: continuous change, and that's change that can be tackled using existing knowledge and experience. Then we looked at the harder one, discontinuous change, and that's change that can't be managed using existing skills. And new skills have got to be learned, and we're going to be looking a bit more at that this morning. And I said last week that we are living in a time of unprecedented discontinuous change, very similar to the times of the Exodus through this story, or very similar to the times of the exile, when the people of God were torn away from everything that they knew. I want to introduce two new concepts this morning, and they're connected with change. First one is technical challenges, and the second one is called adaptive challenges. Exciting. Let me tell you what they mean. Fill in number two. A technical challenge uses the solutions already existing within the church. And this is the area that most churches and most church leaders in the past have dealt with and have felt fairly competent dealing with this. For ministers, technical challenges have been things like preaching faithful sermons, leading people in worship, chairing meetings, pastoral care. All this stuff was learned and it was passed from generation to generation. Now, these technical challenges are very important and they will always remain important in the church. But the solutions to them, in the main, tend to lie within the church. They might cause big challenges, but it seems as though we can cope with them. Technical challenges mean that we can fix it ourselves, either by altering the way we do things or by buying in new people or new equipment. We need a new sound system. What we've done is we've contacted experts. We've had experts in and had a wee look around, and they've decided what they think is best for us. And we're hoping to raise enough money to be able to buy this in the future. Have a wee look at your next church magazine's coming out soon. This is a wee spoiler. Two spoilers I've got this morning. And that's an example of a technical change. What do we need? Oh, this stuff's not working right. Clapped out. It's no good. Get an expert in. Expert looks at it, tells us what we need. We take their advice, and if we can get the money, we buy it. But adaptive challenges are so different from technical ones. Fill in number three. An adapted challenge can't be solved with our existing knowledge and skills. And this is the difference, and we're moving more and more into adaptive challenges. And these challenges come from the world around us changing so rapidly. And we looked at some of those changes last week. Here's an example of an adaptive change that we're going to be attempting in the next 4 or 5 weeks. We're going to attempt an adaptive change in our morning service. Over the last 6 months or so, I have been meeting with leaders who work with our young folk. And we're going to attempt to make the start of the service more young people friendly. We're hoping the songs can be appropriate for young people. The prayers will be a language that they understand. The activities that they might do might be different to what we normally do in church at that point. And you'll be saying, well, what's that going to achieve? I am not sure. And this is the problem with adaptive change. I am not sure. We're hoping that the young people will become more engaged. We're hoping that this part of the service will speak more to them in a way that's more representative for them, and they will get to know God better. And we also hope there will be a better link between here and Powerhouse. Who knows what goes on next door? Probably drinking coffee just now. Still here. Will it work? We honestly don't know. And this is what adaptive change is all about. But if it doesn't work, we'll just stop it and never try it again. No, we won't. Because that's the way we've tended to work in the past. But with adaptive change, the secret is really experimentation. If it doesn't work, we will find out why it didn't work and we will tweak it. And I hope we become a church of tweakers. Is there another? I'm sure there's another meaning for tweakers that I don't know. Somebody will tell me. No. Christine's saying, don't go there. Whatever. But with adaptive change, the secret is experimentation. And it's an area we're really not that expertise in. We tend to try things once, and if it doesn't work, we bury it. That's been my experience over 30 years of ministry. This is where we get adaptive change. Adaptive change or adaptive challenges occur in a changing environment where there's no clear answer. And we've got to see that. So many of the questions we're asking today, we don't know what the answer is. And we've got to just admit that. Adaptive challenges involve a deeper level of change. And this is because adaptive challenges often require us to question and maybe go deeper with deeply held beliefs or change patterns of behavior. I've put that in the notes because you can go home and read that and really ponder that, because there's a lot in that. Technical changes are okay because they tend not to affect us emotionally. Adaptive changes, they hit the emotions. And that's what we don't like. Because fill-in number four says, with an adaptive challenge, the reality is that a new solution will often result in loss. And we have never recognize this, really. Because most of the time when we try to solve a problem or a challenge, we look for a win-win situation. Every minister worth their salt looks for a win-win situation. You've got one half of the church are going to leave if we don't do more of that, and the other half of the church are going to leave if we do more of that. And somehow we try and get a win-win situation that's going to, you know, if you think Brexit is hard, you should see what it's like trying to run a church. And that's what we tend to do. We try to get some kind of win-win, and yeah, we could do this and could do that. Now, that's been fine in the past, where most of the challenges we've had have been technical ones. This is all going to change for the future, because most of our challenges are going to be adaptive challenges. And it's been said that people resist change. And I've always thought that. I've always thought, why do people resist change? And what I'm learning now is people don't. Don't put the next slide up yet. I'm coming to a wee thing here that's not in my notes. I don't think anyone in this church resists change. You agree with that? Yeah? Are you sleeping? No. Next slide says, people don't resist change, they resist loss. And we've got to think about that. We don't resist change, we resist loss. What we do is we think, what are we going to gain or what are we going to lose through this? Now, if you do the lottery, you wouldn't hand back a £1 million winning ticket. If you would, give it to me and I'll cash it in. But most of us, if we did the lottery and we got a £1 million ticket, we'd sort of think for a wee minute it's going to bring a massive amount of change. I can cope with that. And we get our $1 million and you would never see me again. Email me, Florida. So what we do with change is we look and see what is positive and what is not. The common factor in failures with adaptive challenges is this resistance to loss. We consciously or we subconsciously weigh up what's going to happen and we make the decision whether we're going to be for it or against it, purely because of loss. What am I gaining by this? What is the church gaining when we do this? I just don't get it. And we've not been good at communicating these adaptive challenges. And this is something I'm learning, and this is something I hope we can do better. When we look at adaptive challenges and change, we've got to look at things that are full of meaning for us. And this is a problem. Things that we hold dear, our identity, things that we value, what we stand for. This is tied up with our DNA. What makes Traquair Church Traquair? Now, we'll come back to this idea because this is a biggie. The DNA of our congregation is very important. And that's what I've been doing, trying to find out what it is. But back to our story. Remember that story? Who's that guy? Moses. Yeah. Too difficult to keep this baby without being caught. So what did this couple of faith do? It's the mum that comes up with a plan. She knows where Pharaoh's daughter bathes each morning, and she puts Moses in a basket. I always thought it was, you know, so they got the basket ready, they put Moses in, and whew. It doesn't say that. It says she places or puts the basket in the reeds. She has got this plan. She knows where the Pharaoh's daughter's going to be. She always has a wee bath there. So she puts it right where she's going to see them. She's got a plan. And she places it there. And you know what the plan is. Because Miriam is hiding nearby. That's Moses' sister. She's nearby. We know the story. Pharaoh sees Moses and, oh, great, it's a baby. Up pops his sister. She doesn't know that. Oh, it's one of these Hebrew babies. Before she's got any chance to say anything, would you like me to get a Hebrew woman to look after this baby? And she says, yeah, what a great idea. I'll just get one. Whew, brings in her mum. That's the great thing about this story. Her mum's hiding around the corner. Hey, I've actually found one here. Look, do you think you could? Oh, I could if I have to. I think I could do them. And that's the plan that they have. And what does Pharaoh's daughter say? Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you. I will pay you. She's getting paid to bring up her own child. That's a blessing. And this is how the story unfolds. Not only is she going to bring up her son, she gets paid for it. And that's God's reward for her faithfulness. That's what I think. And that brings me to number 5, which is the last one. To walk by faith doesn't mean we stop thinking or planning. And that's what they did there. She sat down there and she had a plan, and I think they rehearsed it. Now, don't wait too long. Once she gets that baby, I want you out there. Just be casual. You want me to get someone? Yeah, I'll find someone. Oh, here's one. Seen that baby before? Never seen Moses before. I mean the baby before. Here's an interesting thing. I was going to keep this till next week. I always thought that Mum and Dad named Moses. Didn't. It's Pharaoh's daughter who names Moses. So I don't know what his name was before. Somebody might know. Is there a name? Anybody know? Write in a postcard. I don't. I always thought that. It's not. Gets a name from his adopted mum. But his mum and dad get a chance to raise him until he's old enough to go to the palace. He's not fully grown, but he's sort of up a bit. They don't know what age. And the great thing is, Moses' parents are commended. Remember that great chapter in Hebrews 11 where it talks about folk who have faith? By faith, Abel did this. By faith, Enoch did it. By faith, Noah. By faith, Abraham. By faith, all these folk did that. By faith, Jacob. Look what he did. And this is what we read. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. They are commended for their faith years later. And remember, this is a young couple. And they go down in history as a couple of faith. And as God is about to transform the people of God under Moses when they leave Egypt, my hope is that God can transform us to meet the challenges of our present day. We'll walk into the future by faith, but we'll also plan. We've got a plan. We'll also experiment, because we've got to experiment. We've got to try new things. Some will work, some won't. Because more and more we must become a missional church, and you'll hear more and more about what that means. A church that's willing to carry out the mission that God has given us. And the question I'm asking this morning, and the question I'm going to keep asking until I'm sick, is, are you willing to take the risk and the challenges of a changing world? Because I can guarantee it will not be easy. Churches are folding today because they've said, we will not take that challenge up. It's too big. It's not going to happen. The only thing that gets me depressed these days is the number of people I'm coming across that are saying, I don't think our church has got 4 or 5 years. And it's not happening once or twice. This is becoming the song of presbytery. And it's sad. And we've got to say, we are not going there. Are we willing to consider that the time ahead of us is nothing like what we've experienced in the past? Because that's what it's going to be like. Not when the church was strong. We are now weak in the West. And we've got to work in our weakness to strength. Are we willing to let go of some of the tried and tested things we've been doing? Things that have brought us success in the past. This will be the hardest thing that we face. Why aren't we doing, I remember, you know, tell me your stories, because I keep getting them. I remember it was full. Oh, I remember we had 500 of this. I remember we had 200 in a Sunday school. Can we not go back? Bring back the flannel graph. Remember those fuzzy felt things? I loved them. You know, I always remember Noah's Ark. They kept falling off, you know. Did they do a Lego one? They do. That would be great. A Lego one would be better. That wouldn't fall off. Note that, Francis. They do a Lego Noah's Ark. Yes. Are we willing as individuals to explore ways that might change us, but also transform the church for the future? This is the question we're going to be asked time and time again. Because I'm willing to change. Because I'm already learning new things. I'm learning painful things. I'm sort of looking back on 30 years nearly of ministry and saying, a lot of the stuff we did just wasn't right. You know? Should be retiring. And now I'm getting this idea that a lot of the stuff we've done in the past, no right. I'm willing to change that. And I need folk to follow me to do that. Because I will risk almost anything to reach the generation that are not sitting with us this morning. We've got space. And I would love for us, however we can, to reach this lost generation. And time again, as we walk through this story of the Exodus, we're going to be confronted with these questions. Amen.